Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live, and happy Memorial Day to you. It's Memorial Day in the United States. That's like Anzac Day for those of you that live down there. Or I don't know what they would, maybe Armistice Day in Europe. I don't know what they, no, Armistice Day would be later. I don't know what they would, but you got to have a Memorial Day everywhere in the world. Everywhere there's been soldiers, you got to have a Memorial Day. Today for Memorial Day, we got the flannel panel. And so we'll discuss the news of the world from a Catholic perspective today. Our guests, as always, first of all, President of Catholic Answers, Chris Check. Hello, Chris Check.
Cy, are there any Anzacs still alive?
Wait. Anzac means Australia,
New Zealand Army Corps.
Oh, is that what it was?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, but they still celebrate the day, right?
Well,
down there?
It's the Gallipoli landing.
I can't imagine that there would still be some alive.
That's what Anzac Day is. It's in April, correct?
I don't know. I said
April 25th.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So, Mr.
And
Mr.
Good
Mr.
Lord,
Mr.
is that an artificial intelligence or is that Joe Heschmeyer? That's also our guest, Joe Heschmeyer. Thank you for being here, Joe.
Yeah. So they have an annual parade. It's very moving.
Oh yeah.
And right. In fact, I read recently that there's too much celebrating going on.
Really? Among the Australians?
Well, there were some people that were complaining that it had taken on an atmosphere of celebration and not solemnity.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
I mean, that was...
We do that with every holiday in America. Well, like Memorial Day, it's basically
you
about hot dogs now.
You grill. Yeah. But it was... that was a brutal, brutal campaign.
Well, do they have something like that?
I mean, it just seemed like a very poorly planned out campaign.
Winston Churchill has some culpability here.
He did. I think nearly lost office over this.
Yeah.
And apparently they would yell Gallipoli
at him?
At him in the House of Commons or House of Lords or whatever. Yeah.
This is the earliest in any flannel panel episode that we've gotten to Winston Churchill.
By no means the first.
We don't usually get to Winston so early. But
there's that great song written by a Scot, I think, called the band played Waltzing Matilda.
It's got some blasphemy in it, just as a little FYI.
It does?
Listeners may, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember. But the movie.
Yeah, don't quote it, but yeah. there's also a movie from the early 80s with your friend Mel Gibson.
It's a Peter...
Wait, who's friend Mel Gibson? Are you saying my friend Mel?
Yeah, you get a clip of Mel Gibson saying hi to you.
Darren is working in there. He's working so hard to try to find it. He can't find it.
It's a Peter Weir picture. Correct.
It is.
Yeah. By the way, I'm not using computers for any of this.
No, you have to use your mind.
The movie
it's amazing.
And the band played Waltzing Matilda. I just didn't remember what day Anzac Day was.
So
I'm an American.
The Peter Weir picture is great, but it has a very bizarre soundtrack.
Because
it was made in the 80s, and it has kind of an electronic... anachronistic soundtrack.
Yeah.
But it's a brutal film.
It seems to me like brutal films were in vogue then. Is that the same period that Breaker Morant came out? I feel like Breaker Morant came out.
Morant may be a little earlier. That is an Edward Woodward picture.
1 year earlier.
Okay. Yeah.
But look at that. He knew Edward Woodward. You used the internet to find out. What are you on, IMDb or whatever that is?
No, but I've seen Gallipoli. I've not seen Breaker Morant.
Okay, Breaker Morant is in the top five films ever made, and it is the single best courtroom drama ever made.
It is a great film.
I feel like you haven't seen A Few Good Men.
It's way better than
A Few Good Men is very good. Judgment at Nuremberg. But Judgment at Nuremberg is not a very good movie.
No, it's not. And by the way, every movie that Tom Cruise is in is marred by Tom Cruise.
we disagree on this, but we will just have to agree to disagree.
Edward Woodward plays the lead, but he's not the director. The guy that directed it is the same guy that made Black Robe, Australian, and the same guy that did Driving Miss Daisy. Gosh, what's his name? All right, Internet Joe.
Come on, Internet Joe. What's up? That's your new name, Internet Joe.
Driving Miss Daisy? I zoned out.
Oh, you did.
It was too deep in the weeds.
We're doing a show here, Joe.
Black Room, yeah. Black Room is a brilliant film too, though not
all right,
for children.
Look, we're Catholics. We do the news of the day. Sometimes, have you guys ever noticed that sometimes I say news of the day, sometimes I say news of the world. I just alternate those.
No,
you didn't notice that. It's like a.
I just figure you're translating secular in different ways, yeah. Since it can mean both age and world.
But there is big news, I feel like. Okay, let me just throw this out there to you and see, because we have a new pope. Now, I know you both know that, and that's not news that I'm announcing we have a new pope, Pope Leo. But I feel like everyone is reserving judgment on Pope Leo. And this is why I think everyone is reserving judgment on Pope Leo. They're waiting to hear what the flannel panel has to say. The people want to know, does the flannel panel approve of Pope Leo or not? And then I think
that's a healthy relationship of the laity to the Pope, I think.
Yes, right.
That's how that works.
Wait, reserve your love for the Holy Father until you hear whether the flannel panel likes him. I think that's very Catholic, as a matter of fact. That's I need to hear about your views of
I can go first.
I'm not sure it's in the business of the laity to render judgment on the Pope.
What kind of Catholics don't judge the Pope? What kind of Catholics would we be? Or what are you, a convert?
Good ones, but he's great. I mean, Pope Leo is great.
He does seem great. Yeah. And I think we're all going to be able to catch our breath.
So yeah, far, so. The number one critique that I've heard against him is that he hasn't solved every problem quickly enough.
I'm mad at him about that, too. I am so ticked. Get on it, Leo.
It's amazing. I mean, if you want something really striking when you feel busy, just go to the Vatican homepage, vatican.va, and look at his schedule for the day. I was looking the other day, and he was meeting with the Prime Minister of Australia, the Vice President of the United States, and the Secretary of State of the United States, and I want to say a third country as well. And it was just, it seemed like a busy day. It seemed like a lot
on top of that, he probably has like tons of fundraising letters to write.
I
that's what fills up my day. I've got a lot of fundraising letters through. I'm sure he does as well.
Dear,
he's got to respond to all the angry emails of people who said, my local priest is such and such.
That's right.
He probably does get those kind of letters. There's probably people that write the Pope and like, Father said this about you.
Last week, he made a very good move with what's it called? JP2 Institute on the family.
He one cardinal is out, another cardinal is in. That's all I know.
I'm going to say a cardinal who needed to go.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Paglia. Yeah, he needed to go.
Yep. You know, I know that that was. I can't say that I know the details. I can say that many people were upset with what happened to the John Paul Institute.
Yes.
And so this is Reyna is the new guy?
I don't know if Joe knows anything about him. I do not.
The only thing I know about him is he was accused of being homophobic, which is the opposite of the allegations of his predecessor. I'll leave it kind of at that. And also,
I never know what Joe's going to say.
An archbishop. The idea that the head of the JP2 Institute will be attacked for basically upholding church teaching on sexual morality, it strikes me as a good sign. I kind of want to say whatever the new chancellor is like, I'm inclined to think it's going to be a massive improvement.
Chancellor, you mean of the...
Oh, yeah, Chancellor of the JP2 Institute. Yeah.
But, all right, well, let me ask you this. When an American got elected pope, do you think that the archbishops of Philadelphia, Los Angeles, and San Francisco were like, yes, I've got a chance now. I might get the red hat. Or do you think they don't think they're holy men? They probably don't think that way.
I mean, I don't know if they thought that. I kind of thought that. Some of them it might be too late for.
Whether they want one or not, we should have some more cardinals, especially on this side of the Mississippi, than we currently do.
Yeah.
Which is zero.
Is it zero? I was trying to think, where's Houston? Give me a map, Joe. Bring Houston up on the...
Houston's retired, right?
We have no cardinals out here in the West? Wow.
I couldn't name which cardinals we have in the U.S. right now. Cardinal DiNardo, I believe, is retired.
DiNardo's retired.
Oh, okay.
I think he voted. He voted, but I don't think he's no longer Houston.
Is there enough cardinals? I mean, there's supposed to be 120 voting cardinals. Maybe we just...
Oh, yeah, there were more than enough cardinals.
No, no.
That's supposed to be a max, by the way.
No, this is what I'm saying, Joe, is 120 the right number? Because there were 135 of voting age when, and this is common. It wasn't like Francis was doing something wrong. They bumped the number up in anticipation that there are people about to reach the age of 80, and then it'll come down to 120. But maybe 120 is not enough. Maybe let's, what about 12 times 12? What about 144?
That could be good.
Right.
It looks like there are only 7 cardinals in the U.S. who are not emeritus on the College of Cardinals report.
Oh.
And those are Cardinal Farrell, Cardinal Harvey, who's there in Rome, Cardinal Prevost, who is now the Pope, so take one away there, Cardinal Supich, Cardinal Dolan, Cardinal McElroy, who was in the West but no longer is.
Right. Oh, that's right. Okay.
And Cardinal
Tobin. I forgot our own cardinal here.
If I'm not missing somebody, I believe there's no one west of the Mississippi who is a current cardinal.
Yeah, I don't believe
cardinal.
There is. Fun fact, the most cardinals in history, for the history of the church, have been Italians.
Oh, really? Is that true?
Italians, and then I don't know, some French and a few Germans, I guess, or something like that. But the reality or the phenomenon of men traveling, cardinals traveling from all points of the earth to vote in a conclave, that's 20th century.
Right. Yeah. Well, the airplane is too.
By necessity.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. But the thing about the Italians is they did a good job at it. It's not like they messed it up. There was a lot of good votes.
I was joking with a friend of mine who is Italian. He lives here in the U.S. And I was like, wow, who would have thought we'd get an American before we get an Italian pope in your lifetime? He's literally not been alive with an Italian pope, which is insane in the history of the church.
Yeah, considering.
But anyone born after 1978 has never seen an Italian pope. But if you were to look at the, say, 400 years prior to that, every pope.
The first pope wasn't Italian, though. I've read
True.
This. I read this in a book somewhere.
I mean,
the first pope wasn't Italian.
Yeah, he kind of was a transplant.
all right, we got to take a break. Yeah, we'll take a quick break. You still didn't find Mel Gibson saying hi to me. You looked for it, but
I sigh.
There we go. That was deep in a file somewhere. All right, we'll take a quick break. Right back with the flannel panel. With the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. Joe Heschmeyer, Chris Check, our guests.
Catholic Answers Live.
Are you looking to study Catholic theology in a formal way with the guidance of faithful scholars? Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by the Augustine Institute, offering master's degrees in theology, pastoral theology, and Catholic education with flexible study options on campus, online, or both. The Augustine Institute equips students to serve Christ and His church in schools, parishes, dioceses, apostolates, and the home. Learn more today at augustine.edu.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily Mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church, on the web at magnificat.com.
He is only one of 4 popes honored as the great.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Leo I was pope at a time when Roman civilization was being overrun by barbarian armies. He stood as a light in the darkness and even saved the city of Rome from destruction by Attila and the Huns. Leo died in 461.
To find out more, visit EWTN.com and click on Catholicism.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kelly, your host. Our guests are Joe Heschmeyer, apologist here at Catholic Answers and author extraordinaire, Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers and fundraising letter writer extraordinaire, and me, your host, Cy Kelly. We're just talking about the news. You can't really talk about the news without talking about the new pope, but I just wanted to share with you that I saw Cardinal Supich. He was still in Rome at the time, and then they had him on the Sunday morning show with Margaret Brennan, that Meet the Press, but Margaret Brennan wasn't on. It was the junior guy. It was their fill-in host, and he asked I have to say, the questioning of Cardinal Supich, who was very patient, was dumb. I mean, you can't talk about a new pope without saying, is he going to ordain women priests? Apparently. The question, the level of the questions was dumb. But he wanted to know about AI, and Supich, Cardinal Supich, was trying to explain, why is Leo taking Leo XIV, the Industrial Revolution, and this new AI revolution being something similar. And I thought the single dumbest question I've ever heard a cardinal ask was then asked, what possibly could the Catholic Church do to regulate or police or control artificial intelligence? what? Like, his interpretation of I don't think, what do they think Pope Leo does? Like, if he says, yes, that one of the main issues we're going to have to deal with, do they think that Pope Leo thinks he's going to make, like, world laws or something?
I would love to see AI end up on the Index Prohibitorum. That it's just like a prohibited book. You're not allowed to read.
You can't use AI. Well, how would you do the show, Joe? Oh, sorry.
Exactly. Great point.
I mean, don't we have some fairly recent examples of the church bringing a lot of influence to bear on certain questions of technology? I think of cloning, for example.
Yes, that's a very good point.
I mean, the church said, no, we're not going to do cloning.
Eugenics was another one.
Yeah. We're not going to do this.
Yeah.
So there are things within the operation of so-called artificial intelligence that the church very will and should very much so speak on.
But it's the conflating of political power with moral leadership, like the incredulity that someone could exercise moral leadership without having political power. Like, what could you do about AI? That was the tenor of the question. Why does the Pope care about this? He can't do anything about it.
But it's
kind of the modern version of, like, how many battalions does the Pope have?
Right.
Yeah, right. It does seem like that. Stalin, right, that asked that? Or Khrushchev or somebody?
Although there's an admission in the fact that the woman is asking the question.
It was a guy.
That fellow was asking the question. I don't watch Meet the Press.
you probably are very much smarter for not watching it.
But if there's an admission in the fact that he's asking the question that he concedes that the Pope has some authority, whether he's prepared to work it out in his logic or not, he's expecting the Pope to say something.
But it's pointless. Like, to me, this question struck me: what's the point of the Pope saying anything? He can't. He doesn't have it. What's he going to do? Pass a law? Like, he can't regulate it. He can't police it.
I don't know what he's thinking. I actually think he's probably acknowledging in a clumsy way that the church has a tremendous amount of authority in the world.
And I want to suggest a term.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, I didn't. Sorry, Chris.
Well, I was just gonna finish, and then I want to hear what Joe has to say. But the world's interest, and Joe has talked about this, the world's interest in the conclave, it seems to me to be the greatest it's ever been. Some of this is surely an effect of the world, the media world in which we function, the technology of modern communications. But the whole world, including a lot of non-Catholics, acknowledge, first of all, the church is a 2,000-year institution, and they're deeply interested in who the next pope is going to be.
That's right.
Whether they're excited about it or not, or hoping that he's going to do something that he will never do, or some things that he could do. But the world is deeply interested in the Catholic Church. They're not deeply interested in the Anglican Church.
No, that's right.
Or the Methodist Church.
Or even really the Dalai Lama. There's no other position like the papacy.
Yep. Well, there actually is not.
No, that's not right.
As a matter of fact.
It is, it doesn't fit into the, if you try to fit it into categories, it extends into some other category that it just doesn't fit in the modern way of thinking about the relationships between governments and churches and moral leadership and political leadership and business and all of it. The papacy kind of fits all in all that differently than every other institution.
Donna Barrick, our marketing director here, will tell you that in the wake of the conclave, the internet search or Google search, how do I become a Catholic, went up 30%.
Oh, wow. That's so cool.
It is.
That is
it
so is. Cool. It All is. Right, Joe, you were going to say something, Joe.
Well, I was going to propose a term that I think might be behind the questioner's question and part of a broader spirit we should be on the lookout for. And the term I want to propose, and maybe someone else has already gotten there, is techno-nihilism. And here's how I would argue it. In the recent past, there was a prevailing spirit of kind of a techno-progressivism, that technology was going to come along and make all of our lives better and better. And, you know, just imagine someday soon robots are going to come and take away all the hard parts of work, and you'll be able to do just easy stuff and make a comfortable living, and et cetera, et cetera. And then not only have those dreams not been fulfilled, but something nearer the opposite in many cases, where rather technology is often taking the good jobs and leaving behind. You know, you can now work in an Amazon factory. For a robot, right? Yeah. Quite seriously.
Yeah.
Or just no jobs are available because they can all be filled by robots.
And one more thing. These have increased the pace with which we work, not created ease.
That's right. Yeah, it's more frantic than it used to be.
You're never free if you have a smartphone. You're never free,
man. All right, so
the promise was now you can work from the beach, and now it just turns out when you're at the beach, you're still at work.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, that's kind of how it's been perversely fulfilled. And so in the face of that, the defenders of technology and its latest forms don't really say, oh, no, it's actually really good. It's really making you happier, because by almost every measurable criteria, it is not. And so instead, the argument just becomes, well, it's inevitable. Like, you can't do anything about it. Like, this is the future, so, you know, suck it up. What are you going to do about it?
I think that is true, Joe. I didn't articulate that, but that is part of what bothered me about the question is, it's just a resignation. Like, what are you going to do about this?
Yeah.
AI doesn't care what you think, Pope.
Right. And so it's just like, well, just give up. And honestly, the people who want this stuff to happen, this is how they argue it. This is what happens when people argue, oh, you can't hold that view on marriage or sexuality or whatever because you'll be on the wrong side of history. They're not saying we have better arguments. They're just saying you're going to lose, so you might as well give up.
That's a very good point.
That's the argument. Go ahead.
I was just going to relate this back to Pope Leo XIII with Rerum Novarum.
Yes.
That there is a material difference in the way modernity turned out because the Pope wrote Rerum Novarum. And I don't think people appreciate that or understand that the way that the relationship between workers and bosses and owners played out over the course of the 20th century was materially and significantly importantly impacted because the Pope wrote Rerum Novarum in whatever it was, 1893 or 4 or whatever.
Yeah. And we avoided two extremes. Like, we avoided the Industrial Revolution just getting worse and worse at a time when it seemed probably inevitable to many people that it would just get worse.
Right.
And we also avoided the kind of radical solution of something like communism. And Leo spoke very clearly against both kind of risks. And, you know, that's not to say we don't see the excesses of capitalism or
industrialism. No, it didn't make the world perfect.
And we didn't see the communist revolutions. Of course, we saw all those things. And yet, looking back even 50 years later, you would say, oh, wow, the world in the mid-20th century, post-war, obviously, seems like a much healthier place for workers than it was at the beginning of the 20th century and in places that weren't communist countries. And it does seem like Leo and those who were inspired by him played a major hand in that.
Yeah, when you think of the kind of Adenauer Christian Democrats of mid-century Europe, they took their cues directly from Catholic social teaching, or if not directly, indirectly. Like, that is that this was in the atmosphere that built. Now, I'm not saying that they built something perfect in Germany, but it's a heck of a lot better than what was there before 1945. You know,
it's true.
So I think that the fact that Leo is saying the church needs to provide moral leadership as it breaks into what looks like a completely new era is a very hopeful sign. It's not a bad sign at all. This is the church can be helpful in these situations.
In this particular topic or field, Leo is, I think, very much Francis's successor.
Well, tell me how. Explain that.
Because Francis devoted a good bit of his writing to talking about what he called the technocratic paradigm, for example.
Oh, yeah.
And its own internal logic, as he described it, and the way it controls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually think that, that always struck me as one of the critique of modernity that was in Francis's pontificate was the strongest part of his pontificate. Like, I think that is a well that you could draw from and really profitably.
Yes,
do very well drawing on that.
And it actually draws on a longer tradition. Like, Francis is squarely in continuity with his immediate predecessors from Paul VI forward. There's a great line in Spes Salvi. It's paragraph 22, where Benedict quotes Theodoro Adorno in his critiques of progressivism, and saying, in the 20th century, Theodoro W. Adorno formulated the problem of faith and progress quite drastically. He said that progress seen accurately is progress from the sling to the atom bomb. Like, oof. It's quite striking, you know, that just blindly believing the newer, bigger thing is better is like thinking, well, it's better that we have atomic bombs than slingshots.
And the thing about the church, too, is it's not a Luddite church. Like, I think sometimes when people think, oh, the church wants to have a say in the whole AI conversation, don't presume that you know what the church is going to say. She's going to draw on pools of wisdom that are quite deep, and she's not just going to say, stop it. Everybody stop it. She's not going to take the Bob Newhart route. But there's the music. We've got to take a quick break. Right back with more Flannel Panel. Catholic Answers Live. Each Catholic is obliged to spread and defend the faith by word and deed. Well, we're here to help. Join special guests Chris Stefanik, Dr. David Anders, Father Jeff Kirby, and all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists this September 25th through 28th in beautiful San Diego for the Catholic Answers Conference. Our theme, Go Make Disciples. Enjoy 4 days of faith, fun, and fellowship. Use promo code EARLY to save $50 when you register today at CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Lots of people have big questions about Catholicism. It needs a big book of answers, and now it's got one. The Big Book of Catholic Answers is filled with helpful replies to more than 250 questions about the faith. Questions about God, salvation history, the Creed, the Bible, the list goes on and on. Order your copy of the Big Book of Catholic Answers today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world. But it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun. And that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron. I am Cy Kellett, your host, Chris Check, our guest president of Catholic Answers, Joe Heschmeyer, our other guest. You've been relegated to other guest, Joe. And when
enough.
The three of us get together and we wear these flannel shirts, it's called the Flannel Panel, and we talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. And we're talking about AI and Pope Leo right now. I don't know why. It utterly knocked me over when I saw that he had taken the name Leo. It just like,
yeah.
I don't know why I didn't like... It just seemed like, wait, what? That's I don't know. Why would you be surprised? Like, you don't know what name a pope is going to take. Why would you be surprised at it?
But I was very surprising.
What? Tell me why.
These were the options. It was either going to be a post-conciliar pope, you know, John Paul III, or maybe a Paul VII, or maybe a Benedict XVII, or was going to be Francis II, or he was going to take like a radically new name. And any of those options would have signaled, you know, one faction or another, at least a minute, you know, whether he's intending it or not, people would have read it as one faction or another of like infighting within the church. And it would have probably signaled some things in terms of his view towards continuity with tradition. Now, by taking a name like Leo XIII, there's such a breath of fresh air of just like, oh, yeah, we don't constantly have to fight about the implementation of Vatican II. We don't have to constantly like be stuck in these two or three camps forever. We can actually remember what it is to be Catholic. And it's great. You know, he was 10 when Vatican II closed. And so he is less caught up, maybe, than some of his predecessors in the interpretive battles. And I don't mean that as a knock against any of them on that.
No.
The interpretive battles matter, but, you know, like, we're to the point where most people alive today weren't alive when Vatican II even happened. Yeah. So it's no longer the newest news we're trying to process.
The name Leo has a great heritage, patrimony.
Yes,
Of course, Leo the First is Leo the Great. He's the guy that stands down Attila,
right,
and also straightens up the heresies at Chalcedon, right, Joe?
The Tome of Leo. That's right.
Yeah. So he
rejects the so-called robber council.
Yes. Yeah. But some of those Christological heresies from Chalcedon. The Leonine Wall. Now I'm not going to get the number correct here, but that's built by Pope Leo in the 7th century, perhaps, to keep the Saracens out. 8th century, maybe.
In Rome?
The wall that goes around the Vatican. Right now,
that's
the one Pope Francis did not take down. that wall.
That's amazing.
Not taking that bait.
Okay.
Here we go. He built walls, not bridges, is what you're saying?
All right, thanks for taking the bait.
I'm sorry.
The Pope that confirms Alfred the Great is a Leo.
Oh, how cool.
And maybe it's the same one.
Pope Leo IV.
Yeah, who builds the wall, and then of course Leo the 13th.
You missed one. Wasn't it a Pope Leo who excommunicated
Leo
Luther?
Leo the 10th who excommunicated Luther.
Oh,
another Augustinian.
Actually, yeah, he kind of botched.
It would appear so. It's true.
Do you know something? If you go to Rome, you go to Santa Maria Sopra Minerva. The two Medici popes are buried there because they paid to build the church, the Medicis did. Oh. So you've got Clement and Leo there, and Clement's the guy that that completely botches Henry VIII, and Leo the 10th is the one who botches.
Well, apparently
with
the Medici popes weren't as good at...
I love the idea that, you know, Martin Luther was an Augustinian friar, and he's going up against Pope Leo the 10th, and Pope Leo the 14th has the chance to totally redeem both the Augustinians and the Leos. In one pontificate. That's fantastic.
Botch may be a little unfair. I wasn't there, and it was probably a difficult thing to manage, but both the guys kind of dragged their feet until it was too late, I guess, would be a quick way to describe that history.
At least the reporting suggested that Leo's initial reaction was to think that the whole fight was a monkish quarrel and just to not appreciate the theological disputes, which, in fairness, like if you talk to people about what is the dispute about justification by faith alone, it's subtler than people realize.
People are still fighting about it today.
Right. It's across on the other side of the Alps. And what does Leo know about what's going on up there in Germany until it gets too late? But it does seem the subsequent history would seem to suggest he didn't handle it very well. That maybe there was something he could have done better than he did. Not to remove the blame from the rebels up north either, though. They could have done a lot better than they did as well. So we'll pray for Pope Leo on the AI thing. I do think that it's going to take tremendous moral leadership. I mean, from 1820 till I looked it up, it's 1891 that Rerum Novarum came out. There we're talking about 70 years from the dawn of the Industrial Revolution to Rerum Novarum. We're going to have to be quicker than 70 years on AI. We don't have 70 years for the church to get her story right. And I actually think she's more nimble than she was in that time, because there was the whole, you know, I think in that century the church was her primary social move was to try to get the kings and queens back, and let's put things back the way they were before the revolutions. And then it took a pope, like a liberal pope, like Leo XIII, to go, oh yeah, we need to talk about the new things. We need to stop obsessing about the old things and talk about the new things. And I don't think the church has those kind of attachments today, so she's probably more nimble. But we do need, we are going to need moral leadership, because the AI thing is crazy how it's going to change the world. I mean, it's just
already has.
It's insane the power that it has.
How it's undermining education, higher education, especially, for example.
It's terrible. I mean, I saw someone posted online. It wasn't students using ChatGPT to write their essays. It was teachers using ChatGPT to write the tests. Yeah. And at the bottom, they left in a warning, ChatGPT can make mistakes. Like, they'd done so little proofreading, they hadn't even realized that they just clearly copy-pasted it. When we have teachers copy-pasting questions and students using ChatGPT to create the answers, no learning is happening.
No, like, right.
Unless it's machine learning. But no human learning is happening. No one is getting smarter as a result of these interactions.
The machine is probably getting smarter. It's probably going, I need to take over. None of these people are doing anything. I need to take over. I need to be in charge.
This is my 2,000th time taking Spanish 1. Yeah. I already know Spanish.
Get Skynet on the phone for me.
Education especially is one of these where very drastic measures, I think, are necessary. Chesterton says correct the exaggeration, or however it goes. I think of my friend Dan Kerr's school in Fort Scott, St. Martin's Academy in Fort Scott, Kansas. There are no screens at that school at all.
Well, this is the thing I wonder about education, when they talk about, oh, the computers, are the cheating and all that. And can't education just take place in the classroom? Like, couldn't you just, as a professor, say, look, you come to class and we do the work here in class. Like, we now, whether you do the reading or not, that's always probably Thomas Aquinas' students didn't do the reading. You know, they came to class and tried to fake it. But it seems to me that one remedy for this is just do the teaching in class, do the interaction in class. That's the way Aristotle did it, and it seemed to work for him.
Increasingly, they're going to have to. In fact, a lot of teachers, instead of assigning essays, are just, you know, handwritten blue books, and we'll do it in the classroom.
Yeah. Or conversation, because you can tell by having a conversation with students, do they know? Like, there is a tradition of just teaching by teaching, like, not by all these systems and, you know, go to the proctor and, you know, just teach. Yeah. Just be in the classroom with them.
You're not going to take notes on your laptop.
You're not doing any of that stuff.
I mean, I would be fine with having notes and everything else if people want to use, like, I grew up before laptop notes, but then use them in my adult life, and it is different. And you actually do retain more when you do them by hand, but there are advantages to being able to write down more and then review it later. Like, I can take more notes. So if you've got a student who's motivated, who wants to actually review their own work, there are advantages to that stuff if you want it. But I would just say, I completely agree that testing should be done in person, sans technology of any kind. And you reduced a lot of, not all of, but a lot of the possibilities of cheating. And you're going to find out a lot more quickly how well students actually know this stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, unless teachers want to say that they themselves are irrelevant and everybody should just be an autodidact, then they just need to do it in the classroom. You need to relate to your students.
Right.
Sit there with them, have conversations. I just think that's the way teaching has a teacher traditionally was somebody who sat and talked with someone. And like the fact that it's, okay, there's no PowerPoint. It's just like, we could still do that. The technology is not keeping us from doing that.
Yeah, it's disheartening. I'll say that, that we haven't just moved that way completely. But I do think, look, even in these solutions, we have to just recognize, like, the era of homework is over. And that's something we haven't internalized.
Right. Yeah, I never a strong one for homework.
Myself. I wasn't a fan of it. But
so, no, I mean, I wasn't like, good at
we're,
it.
We're not set up as if this is how we think the world operates, and yet it is.
Yeah, the homework is, like, come on, really, seriously, you're going to assign homework now? They can just go home and they can they can put the whole thing into, and you could say to the AI, and make a couple mistakes on this, so that,
make it read,
and it'll do it. Come on, you just got to stop being dumb about that stuff. I don't know. Yeah. I think a return to like talking with students would be one solution. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We got more news to get to, lots more news with Joe Heschmeyer and Chris Check, our guests for Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul? And that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come. At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
The EWTN home video highlight for May is The Heresies, Volume 1. The Catholic Church has fought against many heresies from the beginning, and these errors still infiltrate our culture today. Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Joe Heschmeyer, Chris Check, our guests. It's the Flannel Panel. We'll talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. And we talked a little bit about Pope Leo. We talked a little bit about AI. And there's this general question hanging out there. You see it in a lot of media. You see it in a lot of Catholic media. We in this program, we saw it discussed even in Protestant media, that there seems to be a blossoming of interest in the Catholic Church. This almost seems to be we're having some kind of Catholic moment. I think we see, you know, we hear the stories out of Europe that in places like France, which many of us just thought was lost to a kind of eternal secularism, people recovering the faith there, that kind of thing. So is it true or is it not? I don't know. I mean, we'll see as it goes, but there certainly seem to be healthy, helpful signs. As part of that Catholic moment, this story from the National Catholic Register, pilgrimages are having a moment. What's motivating U.S. Catholics to journey to holy places? This was May 19th in the Register. Religious pilgrimages are arguably enjoying a level of popularity today that hasn't been seen since medieval times, when peasants and noblemen alike set out for shrines and holy places on penitential journeys to seek miraculous cures and indulgences, as well as for adventure and an escape from village life. Have either of you noticed this, the uptick in the pilgrimage thing?
How's this measured? Is this in fact true? How does he know? It may be true, and it's certainly a good thing if it is.
Okay, in the U.S.
in La Crosse, Wisconsin, had a record 200,000 pilgrims. So that, yeah. You know, the Americans actually keep numbers.
There are numbers in the story, but I would say they're not entirely dispositive. There is a kind of anecdotal thing to this. I think that's a fair question. I don't know. We could ask Steve Ray. He would know. Half the people on earth that go on pilgrimage go with Steve Ray. It's an interesting thing. I mean, part of it makes me think, well, because we have a lot of disposable wealth. Like, why are Americans going on pilgrimage? They have a lot of money.
Well, I think maybe also to even counterbalance that, we're in a situation where housing is seemingly prohibitively unaffordable for the up-and-coming generations. Like, a lot of people my age, if they don't already own a home, have sort of resigned themselves to the fact they're never going to own a home. And so they're in this weird spot where they make more than they need for rent, but less than they need for a down payment.
Oh, yeah.
And so the temptation is, rather than spend the next 15 years trying to build up enough money to buy a house, when who knows what's going to happen to the housing market, I'm just going to spend it. I'm just going to, you know, go do something. Right. And so, you know, you see eating out going up. You see, you know, premium groceries and Whole Foods and everything going up. And you see travel.
This is consistent with the what's the current generation called?
I don't know.
Gen Z.
No, it's not. The current generation is Gen Z. Is it? Okay, I apologize. I don't know.
But what's the one before Z?
Why? I don't know.
Our iPhone.
Gen Alpha is coming up next.
Yeah, because millennials, Gen Z,
we
Gen
don't
Alpha.
Know. Well,
Gen Alpha
don't
is
act
like
we know.
Very young.
Okay, so okay. Anyway, young Ute. The Utes. Are less interested in material possessions and more in experiences.
Well, and I think
this is true of my own sons, by the way. They live very modestly, but they want to do stuff. They like to do a lot of stuff.
But this was actually promoted about 20 years ago, like the book Eat, Pray, Love. There was this whole thing, don't have things, have experiences. There's a kind of...
I feel pretty confident my sons have not read that book.
Eat, Pray, Love?
Yeah.
I haven't
or
read
seen
it
the movie.
But... All of those are good things, though. But eating, praying, loving, those are good things. I don't know what the book is about. But.
Pilgrimage is a longstanding and fundamental reality of the Catholic religion, and I think it's great news. The Holy Family went on pilgrimage once a year.
I know. That's true. That's recorded in the Bible. Once yes. a year, they made a pilgrimage. Yeah. That's right. And it's very Catholic. Like, it's hard for me to, like, I know that Protestants do this, but it's the incarnational theology of Catholicism is, like, so sacramental, and it's totally comfortable for Catholics to think, oh, yeah, in a special way, God is present in this church or this shrine or where this apparition happened. That God reserves times and places for all kinds of things, and some of them are reserved for holy purposes. And that is so Catholic to think that way.
The three great pilgrimages of history, of course, are the Holy Land and Rome and Compostela in Spain. And then, as you say now, with Marian apparitions, those places become sites.
And the Rhine River.
I would... there, yes.
This is the smoothest ad intro we've ever had.
Usually I'm the guy shilling here. That's good.
I think I did pretty
you
well.
You want to just
go
with that and I'll stop what I was going to say?
Join us, Catholic Answers, on our pilgrimage, starting in Amsterdam, ending is somewhere in the wilds of Africa. I don't know where the Rhine River goes to, but I think it's somewhere deep in Africa. Is that correct?
That's the Nile.
You're in denial.
All right.
Yes.
But you can visit the beautiful Catholic pilgrimage sites of
Cologne.
Cologne, Northern Europe, Central Europe, all this, so much beauty and history there. Come with us, May of 2026. It's going to be a magnificent pilgrimage.
The boat is about a third sold.
See the Three Kings.
Don't.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, don't delay.
That's another great Catholic thing. Like the Three Kings, they're in Germany.
They make a pilgrimage. The Three Kings make a pilgrimage.
That's right. They made a pilgrimage, and now you can make a pilgrimage to visit the Three Kings.
What is it? CatholicCruise.com.
CatholicCruise.com. You should come with us. We'd love it if you'd come with
us. Yeah, it's a year out, folks. And like I say, the boat's already a third sold.
But I remember in...
The whole boat is Catholic Answers.
Yeah, it's just us. And a third sold more a year out. Come on.
Father Sebastian Walsh, the great Norbertine priest, is our chaplain.
Yeah.
I did want to say, is the commercial over?
Yeah, let's talk about pilgrimages.
Wait. CatholicCruise.com.
The commercial's over. CatholicCruise.com. Okay. No more commercial. CatholicCruise.com. Go ahead and say what.
I want to encourage Americans to learn the opportunities for pilgrimage in the lower 48.
Yeah, there are. Like, we had a Marian apparition in Wisconsin.
That's one. Absolutely. Nathaniel and I just went to Santa Fe to see our friend Archbishop Lamy, whose cause should be opened.
Missy and I went up to Carmel to see Junipero Serra a few years ago, and I was one of the – there's something so spiritually fortifying about going to visit a saint. I don't know what it is. I don't know how to describe it. But if you've got a saint, go visit that saint.
The National Shrine of Our Lady of Martyrs in Fultonville, New York, which, if memory serves, is pretty close to the Baseball Hall of Fame, if you want to make it a two-stop.
Double pilgrimage. Double Wow.
There's been some great Catholic baseball players. You know, you might as well check a couple boxes.
But like if you're in New York or New England or somewhere, you could go up and see Kateri Tekakwitha in a matter of hours.
Very
you could make
easy.
A pilgrimage
yes.
to go see her.
Yes.
The outdoor portion of St. John de Brebeuf and Isaac Jogues and the rest is, I think, quite beautiful.
Arriesville.
So, yeah. I
What's that?
Yes.
Arriesville.
Right.
Auriesville. And we just took a group of at our Founder Circle weekend up to see the Incorrupt, Sister Wilhelmina,
right
in Gower,
mm-hmm. right. Yep. Did you guys if you made a pilgrimage in the year 2000? Remember, Pope John Paul was all about the pilgrimages there, and this is my pilgrimage I did that year. I walked from my house to the Mission San Luis Rey, you know, the old California mission, and it's 7 miles. I walked 7 miles. That was my pilgrimage. And then I got there, and there was a crowd. You had to stand in the back. I was like, people, I just walked 7 miles, and I got to stand for the whole Mass.
The Holy Spirit was working there, so
it was teasing me, I think. Like, all right, you think you're a big
stuff?
My
little kids have been really into the idea of religious processions. Aww. Because my brother's in Spain, so he sent some amazing procession videos from southern Spain. And the Holy Week processions are incredible there. But My 5-year-old insisted that we do like a Palm Sunday procession around the local park. So we did with some of the other Catholic families in the neighborhood. But when we tried to explain this idea to my 3-year-old, he got it mixed up in his head. And he was like, we're going to go to our friend's house to have confession? And we're like, nope, not that. That's not what's happening. But my point there is actually that pilgrimages, processions, all that stuff, kids and teenagers love this stuff. Like, if you want to have a several-day experience with your children about the faith in a way where they're not just expected to sit still and look pious, procession is a really good way to do that.
It's a great thing to do as a family or with a group of families, but even more people. I think of the one that's growing dramatically in popularity to Clear Creek every October, that Three Hearts pilgrimage.
Okay, tell me about that. I don't know about that.
The Three Hearts, the heart of Our Lady and Our Lord and St. Joseph.
But like, where would you start?
They start. I know Trent has done it a couple of times, or exactly how far they walk, but it's a couple days walk towards Clear Creek. And it's popular with enthusiasts.
It's a 35-mile penitential walk. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, for folks who love the old rite.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I think when they did the Eucharistic Congress last summer, everybody I know who was at that Eucharistic Congress thought it was wonderful. I didn't hear a single negative word about it. But one of the coolest things were those processions of the Eucharist. I think I told you guys, I might have even said this on a flannel panel we did. Like, after the Eucharist processed through Idaho, I got to visit some Catholics in Idaho. And they just talked about how powerful it was, this procession of the Eucharist across southern Idaho. Mormons came. That's a very Mormon part of the country. Mormons came out. People were like, and there's a real blessing that comes with
yes.
Christ in the Eucharist passing. You know, if whatever openness people might have, he'll accept that openness, even if it's just a kind of spiritual curiosity.
I think the biggest.
Yeah, I'm reminded in Acts when the apostles would walk and people would, you know, go out and place their sick along. And so in Acts 5, verse 15, they would carry their sick out into the streets and lay them on beds and pallets so that as Peter came by, at least his shadow might fall on some of them. That they were looking for healings just from being in the shadows. You have to imagine how much more powerful is Christ himself being processed by. I mean, it's a beautiful thing to kind of bear in mind. The incarnational nature of the faith is something we can overlook.
Here's another one that I'll encourage our American listeners, which I think is probably most of our listeners. Chimayo, the shrine in Chimayo, it's an old Spanish mission on the road between Santa Fe and Taos. I think that Chimayo pilgrimage that takes place around Holy Week is the biggest pilgrimage in the United States.
I didn't know about that.
Yes.
Man, I'm
yeah,
so I much.
Chimayo, Chimayo. Yeah.
It's like Chicago and Mayo put together. Like if you had Chicago mayonnaise and you wanted to make an acronym.
There's a miraculous
Thanks, Joe.
A hole of dirt that people have had, physical healings of their ailments. It's got all the crutches on the wall and that. Yeah. It's beautiful.
So, you know, this summer a pilgrimage does not have to be long. There may be places very close that you could make a pilgrimage. We of course would love it if you'd come on the pilgrimage with us next year. I've always the two pilgrimages we've done together to Rome have been extraordinary. I the, just extraordinary. The
Well, Joe was on one of them.
Yes, Joe.
But the other one was extraordinary too.
But that one was good. The one with Joe was good, and the other one was extraordinary.
Sure, you did that.
But we will go back to Rome.
Yeah, I there is something about pilgrimage. I'm glad people are discovering it, and you can take the kids on a pilgrimage. You can say there's this saint that's a few hours from our house. We're going to make that pilgrimage and just sit and talk with that saint for a while or whatever. But all right, we got way more news to get to. It's the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. Joe Heschmeyer, author of the Eucharist is Really Jesus, Pope Peter, the early church was the Catholic Church, and many other things. Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers. And I, your host, Cy Kellett, we will all be right back with more Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live.